Okay. Slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Yeah? Then we can continue our session. Yeah? For those who have any question, yeah, or meditation reporting, yeah, you can put up your hand. Then we pass you the mic. Yeah? Anybody want to report meditation? Yeah. Okay, don't have. Then we continue with our Heart Sutta. Yeah. So before we continue, yeah, I would like to make some announcement regarding Angulimala story. Just now, Brady was very kind. Yeah. He came and tell me the real Jataka story, the event that we didn't know about. How Angulimala go and kill 1,000 people. According to him, there was another version of the story. So what I heard is different truncated section. So according to him, later I let him explain more detail. He said the teacher that Angulimala learned from, he told me this teacher actually had a lot of students. But Angulimala is one of his, I think, top student, very bright student. Then the other student jealous of him. So they try to create a plot to make him look bad and get into trouble. So according to Pranathaya, he said the other student go and tell this teacher that Angulimala has an affair with his wife. Then he become very unhappy. So he come out with a plot. You want to prove to me that you didn't do, you are faithful to me, you get me 1,000 of this finger. It seems that was the story. Yeah? So I will let Brother Teo explain from which part of the... he told me, don't know what, Vaga or something like that. Brother Teo, come. I pass you the mic. Thank you so much. So this aspect is very important.
Thank you, Brother Teo. In fact, the Angulimala story, it's one of the eight stanza of victory. That is the Jaya Mangala Gatha. So that is how it is stated that how the Buddha overcame his problems. So this story was taken as how through Buddha's skill, he solved that particular problem of Angulimala being a murderer. Now the story behind it is that the in our sutra, it's thus have I heard. That means only at a point where Ananda was there, and then when the king came and all those, so from that point onwards. So in this sutra, the story behind it was not mentioned. Yeah. So what happened is that the Angulimala was a very bright student, and his actual name is known as Ahimsa, means harmlessness. So he was a bright student, and together with the other students were jealous of him. So they concocted a story and told the teacher, saying that Angulimala had an affair with the teacher's wife. So the teacher was furious, and in order to get rid of Angulimala, he told Angulimala that if you, as my pupil, if you are faithful to me, loyal, and can show me your gratitude, you must do this to prove it to me. And therefore, the teacher laid out the condition that he had to go and kill 1,000 people. Right? So Angulimala pleaded with the teacher, said not to sort of punish him in that manner, give him another thing that for him to prove his loyalty of gratitude. But the teacher refused, and the teacher did not even investigate. He just believed what the other students told him. So Angulimala had no choice, and he went about, killing people. So what happened is that he got fed up. In fact, it seems that he has killed until he lost count. So I think that the 999 persons that he had already killed, I think it's actually more than that, because he lost count. Yeah, and that's where that
he, could be.
Each of the person that he had murdered, he cut off a finger.
Yeah.
And then sewed it together. So that Angulimala means garland of fingers. Mm-hmm. That's the name. So anyway, that when he got so fed up, he said that, no, even if today that my mother come or whoever, I'll kill. I'm fed up. And so happened, true enough, because before that, just before that, the father was a minister to the king. And they had a meeting, so the king was going to summon an army to go and arrest Angulimala. So the father went back home, told the mother about the plan of the king. Being a mother, you know, motherly love for the son, even though the son is now a murderer. So that next day, the mother went, you know, all along the way to try to tell Angulimala in order to save him.
Yeah.
And the mother was coming, and Angulimala was at a higher ground, I think as a hilltop or something like that. And so the mother came along. So he made up his mind. He said that even if it is my mother, I'm going to kill. I'm fed up of all this killing, which means that mother became the 1,000th victim. All right? And that morning, the Buddha, as usual, his compassion for the world, as he woke up in the morning and he would survey the world to see who could benefit from him. And he saw Angulimala and knew that Angulimala, if he were to kill his mother, that would mean that he would commit
heavy karma, matricide,
one of the five mortal sins.
Yeah.
Right. So the Buddha of compassion, then he got up, then he carried along, and he was moving. Then the people asked him where the Buddha was going. So he said that he's going to a certain direction, like that. So the people advised him not to go. The Buddha just kept quiet. And that is where that when Angulimala was prepared, saw that his mother is coming, and then suddenly he saw the Buddha also coming in that direction. So the Buddha seems to be ahead of the mother, nearer to Angulimala. And he was very happy. He said, now I can kill that monk. I don't kill my mother. Right? And then from there, as the Buddha near, he made himself appear to Angulimala. And therefore Angulimala chased after the Buddha. So each time when Angulimala chased after the Buddha will just walk to a certain corner, turn around, out of sight. Then when Angulimala reached that point and looked around, the Buddha was way ahead. And then came to another corner, right? The Buddha turned around, and then Angulimala couldn't see him, came to this corner. The Buddha was very far away. And that's how until Angulimala got exhausted and asked the Buddha to stop.
Mm, okay.
So from that part of the story.
Yeah. The text already described.
So this this stanza by the Angulimala, for those of you who know, or rather that some of you who, like say, no plan to get married or having intend to have children, this is the stanza where it was chanted by Angulimala, and it's being used even until today. That when a pregnant woman, especially towards near delivery time, she would chant this and chant this verse in order to have a safe delivery of the child. And it seems that when Angulimala passed away and all those things, and the room that Angulimala occupied at that time in India, when the lay people, the ladies got pregnant and about to give birth, to deliver, they would take the woman and put in Angulimala's room overnight as a blessing. Then only you return. That's the story. Yeah. All right. Yeah, so if today, if you want to know where is this verse, you can get our late chief book, Daily Buddhist Devotions.
There's the stanza there.
Thank you, Brother.
Pass to Brother Teo. Yeah. Let us rejoice. Thank you to Brother Teo for the good sharing. Sadhu. So these are the further story behind. So it will help you understand better. So this story, as you can see, Angulimala basically is a bright student. He's not the murderer that we used to understand in the what you call the Angulimala Sutta. So because of special karmic conditioning, that's why he ended up getting into this trouble. So it could be one of his karmic thing though. When in certain life he did this to people, that's why this life, when there is condition, it surfaced and he became the victim. But because of his parami, the Buddha was able to interfere and prevent him from going down to hell. If he had killed the mother, like Brother Teh say, I think he won't become an arahant. There is a very heavy karmic thing that he will go down straight to maybe avijja hell. Then for all his killing and cruelty, he will have to be in hell to suffer for long, long period. Okay, now we can turn to chapter 7, page 29. So 1.1, chapter 7, we always try to have a recap of what we did in the last session. So this is a recap. It's like a revision for you, which is very good. So I just read too quickly. What is meditation? So that we understand what we are doing in the name of meditation, and this will keep us always in focus. This is a revision. There are two steps involved in the development of meditation as taught by the Buddha. First step is to train the mind to be heedful. We are using a skillful mean or object of meditation to anchor the mind in awareness or meditation, so that the mind is relaxed, aware, silent, and mindful within. The second step is to make use of the trained mind in silent awareness to see things as they are, to develop the meditation as taught by the Buddha, namely, to cultivate the daily mindfulness of sati sampajana, or the four foundations of mindfulness, the three turning of the four noble truths, and of course, finally, to include the noble eightfold path. Then the aim of meditation is to realize the state of enlightenment that is beyond thought, beyond time. Time here refers to psychological time, not physical time, because the Dhamma is timeless or kaliko in Pali. Thought-based meditation is limited to the field of thought. Hence, it cannot free our mind or lead to the realization. It cannot free our mind or lead to realize a state that is beyond thought and beyond time. Because the moment of thought is psychological time. The moment you arise or thought, psychological time arises, mental time. Diligently cultivate the five spiritual faculties of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya to overcome the five mental hindrances of sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, lethargic mind, restlessness, and doubt. Then the danger of having self-delusion and not comprehending what self-delusion or sakkayaditti is. Then the importance of using mindfulness to observe and understand how your mind stir and get conditioned into mental thinking or activity, leading to all the emotion and reaction to sense experience, the condition one's suffering, etc. We are comprehending the famous Mahayana saying, this one is very good, qi xing dong nian. The moment you arise the mind, you create mental activity. That is the meaning. So the arising of mind creates mental activity or thinking, hence stirring the mind. comes to be. Or in the Theravada tradition, it is stated in the first link, the first two links of the dependent origination, dependent on avijja, sankara arise. So avijja paccaya sankara, ignorant condition, activity of mind, or thinking, the first two links of paticca-samuppanna. Originally, before the stirring, the mind is already in a meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner silent, still awareness within. So the stirring of the mind only comes when we do not have the wisdom and understanding of this fundamental principle of the original mind or the true mind. Then through our own delusion or ignorance, we cause our mundane mind to arise. Hence stirring. We are our reaction to sense experience. Our reaction to sense experience at every moment of sense door consciousness. So train the mind to have the silent inner awareness and with clarity to see all this clearly. Then there is no more delusion. Thereby understanding that if we can just let things be, then there is no more suffering or problem. And with this understanding, tranquility will return by not trying to do anything. We are using the thought to suppress or control, etc. That is, just be patient to maintain the silent mind with clear inner awareness and let everything return to its original state before its stirring. Always remember, when there is no delusion or ignorance, then there is no stirring of mind. Hence, having the understanding, only the understanding that only wisdom frees the mind. There is the moment you have wisdom, your mind will not stir and you are free. So no need to do anything after that, because things are just the way they are. Suchness, tatata. Tata meaning thus in Sanskrit or Pali. And the Buddhists think this refers to what is called reality as it is. This is the Pali word, yatta buddha. I think buddhanang, yatta buddhanang, or yatta buddha, I'm not sure. This reality is also referred to as thusness or suchness. And tatata is a Pali word indicating what is, or the isness of thing. A Buddha, an arahan, is defined as someone who knows and see reality as it is. Yatta buddha jnana dasana. This is the word. Gata means actually gati. Gone is the past. Passive participle of the verbal root gam. Gam means go travel. Agata come is the passive or past passive participle of the verb meaning come, arrive. Thus, in this interpretation, Tathagata means literally either the one who has gone to suchness or the one who has arrived at suchness. So this is their interpretation, not important. Okay, next part. The Bodhisattva, through reliance on Prajna Paramita, is unimpeded in his mind. Because there is no impediment, he is not afraid. And he leaves distorted dream thinking far behind, ultimately nirvana. Here, distorted dream thinking means delusion, conditioned inverted thinking, that is, taking the unreal to be real and vice versa. So this verse, you can understand, is very, very meaningful. Because the Mandarin word is tian tao. That's why they use the English translation, inverted thinking. All Buddhas of the three period of time attain anugara samyat sambohi through reliance on prajna paramita. Therefore, know that prajna paramita is a great spiritual mantra, a great bright mantra, a supreme mantra, an unequal mantra. It can remove all suffering, is genuine and not false. That is why the mantra of Prajnaparamita was spoken. Recite it like this: Gate Gate Paragate Parasamgate Pohi Swaha. Here, Prajnaparamita means the perfection of wisdom cultivation, and Anuttara Samyat Sambohi means the perfection of Buddhahood. So this is even more beautiful. These are all from the Heart Sutta. Then the other part is, therefore in emptiness there is no form, feeling, perception, mental activity or consciousness. All this we have gone through. Until no suffering, no cause of arising of suffering, no cessation of suffering, and no Noble Eightfold Path, and no understanding and attaining. This verse appear like very contradictory to normally taught Dhamma. Hence, the beauty and uniqueness of the Heart Sutta. Reason why is always expressed as true emptiness is wonderful existence. That is, when one is able to understand the profound meaning of true emptiness as taught in the Heart Sutta, then existence or life become wonderful and very meaningful and beautiful. Hence, there is no contradiction, because on the one side is taught the conditioned Dhamma within the conditioned world. This we have covered. Then there is the realization of the unconditioned, where you realize Nibbana is the unconditioned, which is the understanding of true emptiness as taught by the Heart Sutta. So the unconditioned Dhamma, as explained by the Buddha, is beyond thought, beyond time. Hence, no word, no concept, no idea, and no this or no that, which imply it cannot be spoken or expressed. Just like the great Tao, the Tao that the Lao Tzu taught, the Tao Te Ching, as taught by Lao Tzu. So his definition of Tao is very, very difficult to penetrate if you don't have the Dhamma. He said, whatever that can be described, spoken, and talked about is not the true Tao. Then he said, nothing is apart from the Tao. So what is the Tao? What is the Tao? You cannot speak about it, isn't it? You cannot talk about it, isn't it? You cannot describe it, isn't it? You have whatever that can be described, spoken or talked about, is not the true Tao. And yet he tells you nothing is apart from the Tao. That's why you become very confused. Then in Malay you say tak tau lah, finish. But it's easy to understand. Well, the Tao is our oneness nature. So from there everything arises. That's why all those that arise are the conditioned Dhamma, the phenomenal world. And that one is created from the Tao and the Tao. That's why whatever that you can talk about, describe or spoken through the mundane mind creation, that is not the Tao, which is also true. Then he said nothing is apart from the Tao. Because the Tao, being the oneness, contain everything. But it's the unconditioned side. So the conditioned side is a manifestation that come from there. That's why it's nothing to do with the Tao. And yet, nothing is apart from the Tao, because from there it comes about. It was born. It was created into existence. So it's just like the unconditioned. You cannot understand. But nothing is apart from the unconditioned, just like Hui Ning came to realize. Everything, all Dhamma arise from that true nature. Nothing is apart from that true nature. It's exactly the same. Okay. Then we go on. Part 3. Veritio conducted a review of the compilation of email notes as written by him to various Buddhist group and Dhamma friends in the early years with the title Understanding the Meditation as Taught by the Buddha so as to enable the cultivator of the Buddha Dhamma to have a better understanding of the key or important Dhammas as constantly emphasized by the Buddha. They are in that book. The importance of understanding Dhammapada verse 1, 2, 1, 8, 3, Verse 21, 22, 23, and the Buddha's final advice to all the monks before his final parinibbana. So these verses are classified under the words of wisdom of the Buddha immediately after the content, introduction, and acknowledgement section. So you go to the website, you will find this book. The importance of understanding the true significance of the Four Noble Truths as expressed by the Buddha as the equivalent to the handful of leaves as emphasized by him at Kosambi in the Simsapa Grove over 2,500 years ago to the monk, then, so as to enable them to stay focused in the cultivation. Otherwise, the chances of deviation are very high and probable. This part I have to explain a bit. Under the sutta, when the Buddha was at Kosambi, he approached the monk. He asked the monk where he grabs a handful of leaves and show it to the monk. He asked, which is more, the handful of leaves that I hold, or the leaf that is in the forest? Of course, the monk say, the leaf that is in the forest is a lot more. Then do you know what he told the monks? He said, likewise, what the Tathagata have understood is like the leaf in the forest. But what I have taught you is just this handful. He said, why? Because this handful is conducive for enlightenment, for the realization of the unconditioned Nibbana, to liberate your mind, to free your mind. And he explained what this handful of leaves are all about. He said, this is the Four Noble Truths. Then in the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the first sermon, also he repeated the same. He proclaimed the Four Noble Truths and the three turning of the Four Noble Truths. So four truths times three, you got 12 modes or 12 aspects. Then inside the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, he mentioned, it is due to the living being's lack of understanding of this Four Noble Truths in its three turning or 12 aspects that condition their birth and death. Then he himself as a Buddha to be at that time as a Bodhisattva, he said, he also has to understand this Four Noble Truths in its three turning and 12 modes before he can proclaim to be the enlightened being. So that shows to you the importance of this Four Noble Truths. Without clearly comprehending this Four Noble Truths in its three turning and 12 modes, there is no way you can become enlightened. So this is the power of his teaching. So this part is in that book that we talk about. You go to the website, you can find them. Then the importance of understanding what is meditation is explained under the email number 2 and 3. So inside the book, there are a lot of emails that I wrote to people in the early days, to all the various Buddhist society and Buddhist grouping. Because during that time, the early years, somehow this email came to me. Then I replied. After I replied, then through the interaction, I shared with those Dhamma friends who attended my class. Then they found it so interesting, so useful. Then they told me, Brother, why not you compile it into a book? And that's how this email compilation came about. And inside this book also, you have the three turning of the Four Noble Truths. The second turning about contemplation, reflection and inquiry, they are all there. Our sister on the first day, I think, asked. So this was the book I was referring to. Then the importance of developing the three types of corresponding wisdom of Sutta-maya Panya, Chinta-maya Panya, and Bhavana-maya Panya that will arise via cultivating the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths as taught by the Buddha via his first sermon, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. This one is under email number 4. Then in the appendix, you can find the whole of the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta in Pali and English. So easy for you to understand. Yeah? Then the next page. Hatsutta Lesson 8. Question. Can you teach me how to meditate? Again, this type of question. Yeah? Never mind. Because it's normal. Most people will have that type of logic, isn't it? You want to learn meditation, what you do? Yeah? You go to somebody and ask, teach me how to meditate. Yeah. But you don't want to understand what is meditation. Then how can you do your meditation? It's like you have a problem, okay? Then you come to me. Pratyo, teach me how to solve my problem. Do you think I can do that? You didn't even tell me what your problem is now. You don't even know what your problem is now. You just know you want to be enlightened. You don't even want to understand your problem. So how can I teach you something to solve your problem? First, you must at least understand what is your problem. Understand? Oh, your problem is you want to be enlightened. So how to do it? You need to meditate. Oh, then the first thing you should find out is like, what is meditation, isn't it? More important than going into it without understanding what meditation is. And you just ask, teach me how to meditate. A lot of gullible ones will teach you. Understand? You have to them, they learn like that, they teach like that. Yeah. So you have to have that understanding. So this answer, you have to make a note of, is very good. I said, this is the most common question, but also the most common mistake, because it is a wrong question to ask. Why is it a wrong question? When you ask this question, you expect the teacher or instructor to give you a method and a technique to meditate, right? You teach me how to meditate. So they say, okay, do this method and technique. Note this, note that. Note anapanasati. Focus on this, focus on that, or note the rising and the falling. Or do vipassana. How to do? Mindfully walk. All this has got nothing to do with meditation. Understand or not? These are all skillful means to train something, but they didn't tell you. Well, they themselves don't know. They have been taught the same way. So when you ask this question, you expect the teacher or instructor to give you a method and a technique to meditate. And this sounds very logical, isn't it? But what is a method? What is a technique? It is just only a series of instructions to do certain things, like training the mind to be mindful and heedful, so that it's in the moment, silent, peaceful and aware within, or to train the mind to develop some form of concentration, etc. And more often than not, the method or technique taught never define the meditation. So isn't it more important to understand what is meditation? Only then do we know how to develop it. So whatever that appears logical may not necessarily be the truth or right question to ask. Then the note, unless you understand what is meditation, you will not be able to develop it. True or not? You cannot learn something that you don't know. So, all methods and techniques given are only initial skillful means meant to train or help train the mind to be mindful, leading to heedfulness or to develop concentration. They are only a series of instructions given to initially train the mind so that it is not heedlessly lost in thought or preoccupied with what it is thinking or feeling. So the purpose of meditation is to train the mind to be mindful, leading to heedfulness, then to use it to see things as they are, to develop the wisdom, and to understand how the five mental hindrances can hinder your mind from returning to its original state of silent inner awareness and peace before the stirring. Do not fight the mental hindrance or force it to go away, but instead just develop the corresponding five spiritual faculty of mind, especially sati and samadhi, as taught by the Buddha, to arise the wisdom to counter them. For the Dhamma is beyond thought and beyond time. So heedfulness is without thought, hence without psychological time. Then Bretthieu always advises us to diligently cultivate the five spiritual faculties because they are key to the development of the 37 factors of enlightenment. They appear twice within the 37 factors of enlightenment. So these five spiritual faculties, the first set is the normal. The second set, exactly the same, but they are called powers or balas. So when you develop until these five spiritual faculties become very stable, unshakable, they become powers. They become balas. So this is the second set of five spiritual faculties within the 37 factors of enlightenment. And sati appear many places. Sati is the most important. Then the next part is question 2. What about those who believe in chanting? Can chanting itself bring about enlightenment? Here is where I explain. Yes, it can, provided you know how to chant with very strong faith, clear mindfulness and understanding. Then it can bring about the cultivation of the five spiritual faculties of mind, sadha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya, leading to the enlightenment. So don't be rigid or dogmatic to simply comment when you still cannot understand other people's practice or cultivation, especially those of Mahayana and the Pure Land tradition. Their Buddhas and their great Bodhisattvas vow are very powerful, and they can help those who are sincere to connect to their vows, enabling them to develop their cultivation so much faster. Whatever you do in life, and if you know how to develop it with understanding, then it can bring about a transformation too. For life itself is the meditation. So via the cultivation of the daily mindfulness, which is the cultivation of sati sampajana. So this part I have explained before. When you chant with the faith, you develop the spiritual faculty, sadha, then the virya. Then after that, you chant until the chanting and the Buddha's name or the four hao become one. Then it develops sati. Then these beats also. From the abbot. Tonight, after we end the class, you can come and collect one each. So this is to help you to develop mindfulness, meditation, develop the spiritual faculty. You know this Mahayana bit. You just use it to meditate. So some say you use it to develop the sensation, the feeling. Every time you touch, you move. You touch, you move. But some Mahayana monk or nun, they use it to preserve their chanting. Understand? Amitofo. Every time they chant one, they move, they move, they move. Then it, throughout the day they are doing, it's like they are exercising their spiritual faculty of mindfulness. Then they become very mindful. And when they chant with understanding, with clarity, the sati become very, very different. Then when it's stabilized, sati and samadhi will bring forth the cultivation. That is the meditative path factor. So samasati, samasamadhi will give rise to the bhavana. Bhavana is the meditative training. Then you can see things as they are, awakened through the direct seeing. That's how wisdom come to be. That's why when the five spiritual faculty is there, they also can realize the Noble Eightfold Path. They also have those teachings, except that it's not described how they cultivate it. Their focus is on the Buddha's name or the great being's name because they have faith in them. So this is how Pure Land chanting improvise on the great parami of their teacher or the Sammasambuddha or great being that they have faith in. So when they connect and link, then their vow merge with the nature's law, then no need anybody to be there. It will just connect you, link you, and the affinity through that vow will actually help you to progress. That's how Mahayana training is very different. So it's up to the individual when you develop the cultivation, whatever that suit you, you find easier, more appropriate or conducive, use it. Because everyone is different. You never know what your past is. Okay. Then we go on. Some important truth that Bharatiya has learned from his teacher, Prachanyantra Amarubhikkhu, a very wise and famous Thai monk during the early days of his cultivation. I met him in 1988 until 1992. Then later on, I think, because of some incident in Thailand. So things happen, but don't worry about those things. So what he taught me is very good. These are the six important things he taught me. The first one is, you try to understand this. You can understand, then you will have a lot of wisdom. When I met him that time in 1988, that time I was still cultivating, searching. Then I already met Xuan Hua, taken refuge. But then, I need somebody to tell me certain truth about my nature, my mind. So I look everywhere, I cannot find. We had the other textbook all very abstract that time. And Theravada one is very, very, they call Pali type, or very academic type. Then I heard him say, I read to you, see whether you understand or not. Mind is mind. M-I-N-D, not M-I-N-E. Mind is mind. Understand or not? Not like that one. Mind is mine, yours is mine. Then it becomes different thing. So this one, M-I-N-D is M-I-N-D. Mind is mind. Body is body. Of course, after that, his body is never the mind. True or not? Then the mind is never the body. But body is important too, because both body and mind must harmonize to help us to live life and develop the meditation. And we choose take care of mind, because mind is more important. Why? Because the Buddha said mind is the forerunner of all things. You remember? And mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. So you take care of mind, you take care of karma. Understand not? You take care of everything. But you need a physical body. You remember? When you chant the contemplation of food, you take this food for what? Not for indulgence, not for sensual pleasure, not to beautify, not to put on weight, for fattening and all things. In the 10th contemplation for the monk also got this one. But to sustain this body so that it's fit enough to help you develop the cultivation, understand or not? Then just like this body needs sustenance to have the condition for you to cultivate, your mind also need Dhamma, understand, as sustenance for you to develop the meditation to awaken. So this is all in your contemplation. So when you reflect and contemplate, you develop a lot of understanding. So what happened was, when his teacher said this, I straight away full of joy. Then I not scared. Because I said, my teacher said, I have faith in him, because I saw him, and I can feel him. His loving kindness, his metta, his dhamma, and his nature, I can feel. I can detect all those things. Then I learned so much from him. I developed so much understanding through what he shared with me. He just talked, then I just listened, then I learned. Then when I heard this, I said, now I know how to meditate. Mind is mind. Body is body. Body never the mind. Mind never the body. So when I meditate, you know what happened? When the pain started to develop, I was in a 3-day, 2-night, 8 precept retreat. So you know, every day, walk, sit, until the pain. But that time, I already knew, I never labeled it. Then I want to understand, how can I break free from this phenomenal pain? Because that time I didn't know what to do. And that time I tried to relax, but I couldn't even really go through it. After that, I changed posture and do something else. Then when I heard this statement, then I reflected, I can't help it. The mind is the mind. Body is the body. Mind not the body. Body not the mind. Means I must realize the mind. Understand? So I become so brave. I decided to see it through. No? Then I remember what the Buddha mentioned. Make that a very strong vow below the Bodhi tree, you remember? Before he became enlightened, what did he say? Not until the sinners and vain or whatever dry up. If he didn't realize the enlightenment, he will never get up. You realize or not? But I'm not so brave. I just tell myself, I will give it a try. So I determined. I want to find out. So I sat. Then the pain developed. Because after long sitting, the pain developed. Then I tell myself, body is just a body. Body never the mind. Mind never the body. These two are different. Then I remember the first jnana knowledge. The 16 stages of insight knowledge. What is the first one? Able to discern? That means you know, isn't it? You didn't hear. Paricheda jnana. Able to discern clearly between form and mind. Nama rupa paricheda jnana. You heard of that before, Brother? Yeah. So this is the first jnana knowledge, first insight knowledge. So when I heard mind is mind, body is body, I become very brave. I want to find out. What is this insight knowledge? What is this jnana? So I relax into it, I silent. Or it builds up until it becomes almost unbearable. Then the thought comes in. Hey, you better stop, otherwise you paralyze. Or you cannot stand out. Then I say, your worst case scenario is what? Worst case scenario is what? I fail. Understand or not? I don't think anything will happen to my leg because that time I was so young. I was only 30 years old. So I see it through. I determine. I say, no matter what happened, I'm going to see it through. So I relax into it and I silent. And you know what happened? During that moment, the moment I relax, because I do not fear that sensation, I do not give up, I just silent my mind, relax into it and silent. All of a sudden, there is a very bright light flashed to my mind. Very bright. Then I was so amazed after that. It was a shift in consciousness. The whole of that sensation, which is very, very severe, to normal people is very painful. You cannot really endure. Suddenly that thing gone, no. Completely gone, no. Then my mind becomes so clear, you know, full of awareness, you know, and so bright, you know, with all the virya inside there. Then all of a sudden, I feel funny. You know. Then I want to check, you know, what actually happened? What has changed? Then my awareness zoom into that place. You know. That's why the mind becomes silent and be, you know. Then it saw all those things inside there, you know, without word, you know. Then I know what they mean by pulling sensation, what. All these are words. But when you see it actually in the meditation, it's without word. Then I realize that thing was there was because you didn't relax and the chi cannot flow. Then when I relax into it and I silent, then the shift of consciousness come and this mind that is transformed with that clarity, suddenly the chi just flashed through. Then I check everywhere. I can't find that pain. I can't find anything. Then there was so much joy. You know. And do you know, from that day onward until now, I meditate, I don't have problem with pain. I know how to relax into it. I just know what to do. That's how after that my meditation become very different. Then I realized the mind, the knowing mind, the awareness, it's just the awareness. It's not the mundane mind. It's not the grasping mind. The two are different. The phenomena is a phenomena. There is the form, the rupa. Then the awareness is the mind. That is the true mind. That is the one without word, aware. And because it's aware, there is no thought, there is no aggregate, that's why there is no sensation. That's how, from this statement of my teacher, I did it and I break free. Yeah. Then later on, after many years, together with my Kanemita, they told me, hey, Brett, do you want to go and listen to a Dhamma talk or not? There's a Canadian monk, or don't know what monk is it, coming to give a talk at BGA. I say, okay, we go. Thank you. Then it seems in the talk, this monk shared his experience. He also want to do this. He tried to be a hero, but he don't have the understanding. So he want to sit through pain. You know what he told us or not? First time he did, he endured until he fainted. You heard what I say, no? Until he fainted 3 days. 3 days, 2 nights. Then when he woke up, he's still very determined. He still want to try. That's why don't try to be a hero when you don't understand. You can get into trouble if you don't understand. But luckily he fainted, and finally when he become conscious again, he recovered. But to him, he said he learned a lot. He learned a lot, but I didn't hear him describe what he learned. So this is what happened when you listen to Dhamma. If that Dhamma has truth, can bring for understanding and give you the understanding to meditate, then you can benefit from it. Otherwise, if on your own you try to find out, unless you got your past good parami or karma, chances is a lot of this trial and error, you will make a lot of mistakes. You remember Thomas Edison or not? How did he discover electricity? He tried more than 1,000 times and he failed until finally he succeeded. That's why most of the time you try one, you fail first, fail miserably. But if you are patient, persevere, then finally you got it. But if you have a teacher, a guide, then easy. So from here, I did it. Then the second one is what I told you last night. Read. What is it? We choose everything as because only form am I, a mighty nature rolling by. So not so real. And not what you think. You know why mighty nature rolling by? Because nature's law, understand or not? The pancha niyama operating. That's why mighty nature rolling by. And this is very beautiful. I just heard from him. That straight away he went in. And I realized, wow, this is real wisdom. This is the best way to straighten your view. And straight away I don't got no problem with situation after that. Because I accept everything as the reality as natural. Then the other thing that this realization can have the wisdom is, it's only form and mind, how real can it be? Understand? Namarup, namarup. We have the Thai word for namarupa is, they call it rup, namarup. I always hear this from my teacher, or namrup. So, namarupa. So if it's only form and mind, when you argue with who? Another form and mind, understand? And the form and mind is just the way he is. When there is wrong view, delusion, the form and mind will do funny thing, understand? That's why when you have delusion and do all those mistakes, it's not you, understand? And you know what the Buddha say or not? It's because living being, don't have the wisdom. That's why they develop this self-delusion, grasp and cling and hold, and they have to go through this insistent birth and death. You read the Mahayana Sutta, they always say one. Because you grasp, you cling, and you have inverted view. That's why you are trapped in samsara. You cannot free your mind. So when you have all this understanding, you become different. Then the third advice is what? When I met him, he tell me not less than 6 times. No. Every time I meet him, he tell me the same message. That's why this one wake me up. That time I still don't know about the 3 turning. No. I still don't know about the 2nd turning. No. But because of what he told me, he said, we choose contemplate all Dhamma until they are very, very clear. So importance of the 2nd turning wisdom. But later on, when Yun Chan asked me to come out and share, then he said, can we share more specific Dhamma? Then I said, can. Then he asked me for the topic. Then we were at Vipassana Center. You know? Yeah. So I saw on the wall the 5 ascetic. Oh, I said, this is the first sermon, isn't it? I think we start with that one. Then after that, he said, yeah, good, good topic. Then I asked her, you got any textbook or not? Well, I haven't read the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. I heard about that sutta, I never read. No. I don't know what that sutta is. No. So I asked her, and she very good. No. She said, yeah, Brother Teo, I give you one. He sent me the Thai chanting book. No. Oh, very good, the Thai chanting book. The English translation, not so bad. Not so bad. Then when I read, I straight away understand what the 3 turning is. But the 2nd turning was what I have been doing. My teacher has been telling me, we choose contemplate all Dhamma until very, very clear. So I have been continuously contemplating, reflecting, like what I teach you. Why the Buddha say this? How can I understand this? Then I make inquiry. Then I reflect, I contemplate. Then I listen to truth. I listen to what they say. Then I reflect, I contemplate. Then I understand. That's how the 2nd turning becomes so powerful. Then the 4th one is what? He always tell me this one. The highest or real meditation is what? We choose aware of all action and all movement in the present moment. So what is this? This is the daily mindfulness, meditation in daily life. This is sati sampajana. That's why I learned all this from him. Then I shift my meditation. Well, last time my anapanasati was very good. I can go into continuous mindfulness and go into absorption. And I seclude my mind inside there. That's why this one cannot move. That when I was a uni student, that time I already meditated. It was so still, like a column of energy inside the heart here, locked inside there. So still, nothing can go in because of the absorption energy, the continuous mindfulness. And the anapanasati is with me all the time. That time I'm breathing. Anapanasati. Yes. The first time I see that, I remember the anapanasati just come. Means in the past I have done a lot. And I was attending Sister Jingging's class during the early 80s. He teach rising falling. But the moment I see it, I cannot do. I straight away went to anapanasati. Then I remember when I report the meditation, I said the breath is so clear and I become so calm, so still, so peaceful. She becomes so interested. She keep on asking me, what else? What else? What else? So that was what happened. Then the first time I meditate, you remember, I met K. Sri Dhammananda in the university, first day when I attended the uni in 1975. First time I was there. Then my classmate, who also I knew that day, I remember it's a Terengganu boy, So Wee Chong. He said, "Where do you got, Mr. Teo, is it, you got anywhere to go or not tonight?" I said, "No." I said, "I take you somewhere." So I didn't know where, He took me to Science Faculty. Then I saw this monk, bald head, fully in robe, that speaks so beautiful English, that speak the Dhamma. Then I came to know his name. Then I remember that first book, What Buddhists Believe, he was the author, That got so coincident on in life. Then straight away, that night I go back, I decide to meditate. But I got a roommate. I cannot meditate when he is not asleep. So I wait till he sleep. So exactly midnight, I came down, sat on the floor, I meditate. I don't know how to meditate. Because that time when he was giving the Dhamma talk, he keep on pointing to his forehead. He said, look inside, look inside. He said. So to him, the mind is at the brain there, you know, look inside, look inside. So I also don't know. So I look inside. Because I'm a science student, I can focus, I can concentrate very well. So I look inside, I saw nothing. Everything was dark. Then suddenly one bright spot came in. I saw one bright spot. Then at least there is a target for me to focus. Isn't it? I don't know what is meditation or what you expect me to do. So I saw that one spot. So I just give it a focus. Because my mind that time can focus. I don't know why. Stuck there. Then after it's stuck there, it becomes so quiet, so peaceful. Then the curious mind say, why not give it a push? So I send in the energy, I give it a push. From that one pointedness, that mind went in. And what this mind saw was infinite space. Infinite space. It's like this mind traveling out into infinite space. Then after it did that, for a while, it withdraw. After it withdraw, what is the alarm? Oh, dinner time. So, cannot continue. Stop here. Or finish it off. Okay. When I withdraw, I thought maximum half an hour only. I was meditating. Then I open my eye. I look at the watch. 4 a.m. I have been sitting there for 4 hours. That is the first time I meditate. I don't know how to meditate. And you know what happened after that? After I came out of that, my mind was so still, so calm, so strong in the energy. And to me, that time, very gullible, this must be meditation. Because I don't know what it is. Suddenly I become so calm, so still. And this calmness and stillness was with me for 4 or 5 days long when I was in the university. That's why after that, I like to sit one. Then in the university, I think a lot of them, they know. Those who know me, they call me what? You know what they call me? You think Brother Teo? Or Teo? They call me Wo Xiong. Her Xiong. Because whenever I go with them, like Buddhist Society function or any trip, I will just go there, I sit one corner. I just alone. Of course, sometimes I interact with them. But most of the time, I like to be on my own, in seclusion, sit, relax. And I like to watch nature, look at the sky and all those things. That's why very, very strange. And how did people call me He Xiong? No need to talk to him. Yeah, he is like a monk. He's not interested in all those activities. But I do join those activities. But I join in a different way. I participate, but in a different way. So you look at it, you will know. That's why your past is so different. When you come, you are so different. And all these things just happen. Nobody taught me. And a lot of the things that I developed through the understanding that I share with you this life, I never learned this life. It just come. The book come, the teacher come, the guide come, and everything just come. How can it be? Unless it's from the past cultivation. So a lot of this thing, as cultivator, when you connect, you will come to know. You can retrace back, like what we go through in the early part, the sharing by, I think, Shen Hua, I don't know who, I forgot already. You will come to know all these things. Okay, with that, we can go for dinner. Yeah, you can rejoice. Sadhu. 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 Okay. So luckily you got alarm, otherwise you are going to miss your dinner because I'm not taking dinner. Those who take dinner, you can go ahead. I was told for 8 preceptor, you got miso soup in it. You can go and have your miso soup. Then you can also have your liquid food. You don't worry. Then if really your body need, just renew your 5 precept and go down and have your food. So no need to be very rigid about it. You just adjust according to what your body can allow you to do. Okay. Yeah, thank you. Those who want to collect your this one first, also you can come. No problem.
Now, my you way.